College for Adults, its staff and student body want to wish Kim Isaacs, sitting right back there, Mazel Tov on his engagement to a student in the Jerusalem College for Adults, Shulamit Tyberg. This is our great Mazel Tov. They just got engaged, and we wish them, in Yetz Hashem, that they should have a long life of health, happiness, and joy. We're very happy for Kim. We're very happy for Shulamit, and we feel that this is really one giant step further for the Jerusalem College for Adults, you know, what we have accomplished over here. In other words, we can now advertise, this is a place to come, you know. Two very, very wonderful people. When they come together, it's a very big simcha for them and for Klal Yisrael. We wish them that they should have everything should go well for them. Gesundheit. All right. What other announcement? I guess I do have another announcement. I have Yahrzeit today for my father, Yehuda Rab Yonah, and on Monday I had Yahrzeit for my mother, Chava Bela Basra Malcha David, Alei Shalom. And so I'm dedicating this year to the Yahrzeit of my father and my mother. And by the way, it wasn't in the same year. It was about 24, 25 years difference. My mother died, she was a young woman. My father was, 86, 87. All right, you know, that's even getting young today. That's the way it is. And of all things, sometime during the night, my wife, working diligently at the on the internet, was able to find the date that my father arrived in the United States. There's an Ellis Island. There's the Ellis Island site. So she found. We didn't know what name he came under, and she tried every conceivable form of Yehuda, and she finally came up with Judah, and she got Judah Gold. And all my aunts arrived on the Rotterdam. It was a boat that left from Rotterdam, and the name was, it was the SS Rotterdam. They arrived on July 1st, 1923. So that's an important. I never knew what year my father arrived. Well, no, everybody came through Ellis Island. The Porter, unless of course there may have been people who came through San Francisco and Seattle, Baltimore as well. But the overwhelming majority was about 5 million that came through Ellis Island. So, you know, I imagine if that's on the internet, then they'll have the rest of them coming soon. All right. So, we did chapters 12 and 13. 13 and 14, I'm sorry. 13 and 14, we didn't finish 14. But 13 and 14... were a graphic description of the fall of Babylon. Now, I have to reiterate again, this is being said by Yeshayahu 170 years before the event. Not only is it 170 years before the event, there wasn't even a kingdom called Babel at the time of Yeshayahu. What happens if a Navi would get up today and he would describe to us, I don't know, the fall of the empire of Lower Slobovia by the mighty forces of Krypton? Let me ask you. Lower Slobovia is a little Abner, right? You remember very good. And Krypton is... Now, what would happen if I would tell you today how the forces of the world, led by Krypton, come against Lower Slobovia, and it's a whole coalition of forces, you know, Polynesia and Micronesia. I can't think of any other crazy names. I don't know. Would it have any meaning to you? It would have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. Here we have, for two chapters, a very graphic description of the fall of Babel. Who Babel? What Babel? Where Babel?
And then there's a description of the king of Babel. He's not mentioned by name, but there's a description of him as he finally comes down to the grave, and all of his fellow dictators, killers, and murderers throughout all of history. First of all, they're frightened that he's coming to join them at the grave. And then finally, when they see him coming, they go, the same thing happened to you that happened to us. Like, you weren't any better than us. What meaning do you think a prophecy of this sort would have had to people in the days of Yeshayahu? I think that they would look at Yeshayahu like he's from Mars or from Krypton. It has absolutely no meaning. It has absolutely no meaning. What are you talking about? Babel. And he uses the name Babel. There is no Babel in the world. What's he talking about? What's he saying in these two chapters? What meaning, what significance does it have? So you have to understand the following. There was a pasuk earlier on, I think it was in chapter 9, Tov Zog, write this, and let it be sealed. There were two kinds of prophecy. There was the prophecy that was addressed to the people of his generation, which the Navi himself said to the people of his time. There were prophecies, and fitting into that is prophecies for the future of Klal Yisrael, for example, chapters 11 and 12, that you should know there are the potential and the possibility for great periods in history exist. All of this is something that Klal Yisrael can relate to. There was a second set of prophecies, and that set of prophecies was written and duly inscribed, and it was given to the students of the Navi, like Hashivis have Yeshivis, Nevi'im had schools of Nevi'im. And there were prophecies that were given to their students to be handed down from generation to generation until the generation that will need it will get it, and they will get it via Yeshayahu. Otherwise, we simply cannot understand that Yeshayahu is going to stand up and this graphic description of Babel, but it's so graphic. And what's going to happen with Babel afterwards? It's amazing. And everything we know is true. Everything happened. But it would have been totally meaningless to the people of Yeshayahu's generation. So that falls into the category of prophecy, and there are a number of this by each one of the Nevi'im, that it is being, it's said, in other words, it was received, Yeshayahu kolet et hanevuah, it is written, it is told to his students, and his students are the ones that are going to keep it ready and waiting for the moment at which it's going to be necessary. And then, we really don't have enough time to do that, but the fact is that there are at least four or five other prophets that talk about the destruction of Babel. And they all, and not only do they talk about the destruction of Babel, they talk about the evil of Babel. And there are similar ideas that go through them. Similar ideas. In other words, the kind of evil that Babel was, there was no other. In the ancient world, there was none like it. Paras and Yavan, Persia and Greece were not as bad. The next ones who are going to be Babel-like will be Rome, and of course the Christian world, which ultimately brings us to Shoah as well. So that's, I just want you to understand that we may come up with other prophecies as well that are just not... for the consumption of the people in his day. But they were preserved and guarded and watched over and transmitted from generation to generation by the Nevi'im. So we...
people don't understand until they happen. Remember there was one pasuk that had to do with the Yoredet?
Yes, my pasuk. All right, so that's something else. I'll tell you what. In other words, even psukim that can relate to us, that Jews in all generations can relate to, it doesn't necessarily mean that we truly understand the pasuk until it in fact happens. You understand? What she's referring to is what I said it some years ago. Yeah, it's in Yirmiyahu. Remember, I didn't sleep one night of Rosh Hashanah. Now, you know what it means for a rabbi not to sleep a night of Rosh Hashanah. Worked so hard and got 2 days in this country. 2 days Rosh Hashanah. And we worked very hard. And one night I didn't sleep, and all of a sudden the prophet went through my head. It was the Haftorah. The Haftorah in Yirmiyahu, where the Haftorah says that the Jewish people are going to return from all over the world. One of the amazing psukim of Kibbutz Golis. Take a look at chapter 31. Find it for me in chapter 31 in Yirmiyahu. I think it's 31. Sure, it's 31. It may even be 30.
Here it is. Which one did you want?
Okay. Here it says. It's 31, where it says, Hinini mevi otam, it's the Haftarah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Hinini mevi otam, behold, I will bring them. Pasuk Zion, 7. Hinini mevi otam, Eretz Tzafon, behold, I will bring them from the land of the north, V'kipatzim, the Arkitei, and I will gather them in from the ends of the earth. Vom, and amongst them will be Iver, the blind, Piseach, the lame, Horav, the Oledet, Yachdov, a pregnant woman, and one who gives birth together. Kohol, Gotol, Yoshuvu, Heino, a great community will return here. Bivichiyavo, they will come with tears. Ubetachnunim, O Vilem, and with prayer I will bring them. Olichem, El Nachale, Mayim, I'm going to bring them to streams of water. Bederech Yoshua, they're going to go on a straight route. Lo Yi Koshlupa, and they are not going to stumble. Ki Hayiti Li Yisrael Lo'av, because I'm a father to Israel. Ve Ephraim Bechodihu, and Ephraim is my firstborn. So I remember that night of Rosh Hashanah, it was a few months. Let's say first the problem of the Pasuk. The Mefarshim have a problem in the Pasuk, because the Pasuk says, Horav Yoledet Yachdav, a pregnant woman and a woman who gives birth together. They have problems with the grammar of it, and the Malbim therefore says that it's really a term that expresses the birth of a nation, the birth pangs, horror, the labor pangs of bringing a nation into being and finally its birth. And you know, Malbim is, of course, you know how I feel about the Malbim. But here, what occurred to me was the following. There had been an item in the paper that in the great Ethiopian 30-hour Aliyah, there were eight women who got onto the planes pregnant, but when they arrived in Eretz Yisrael, they had given birth. 8 children were born on board. So I said, here's a classic example of a pasuk in the Navi that cannot be understood until you know the fact. Because take a look at what it says. Hora v'yoledet yachdav, it's the same woman, begins the journey as Hora and arrives having given birth. And then it says, Kahal gadol yoshuvu heina. It's talking about a great community returning here, a community coming all together. Bivichi yavo, that's for sure, ubetachanunim ovilein, olichem anachale, mayim bederech yosho, straight, by air straight, lo yikoshlupa. And I tell you, when they described it, that Motzei Shabbos, I remember Motzei Shabbos, that for 30 hours there were planes overhead, just down, Eretz Yisrael, back, and not a single mishap. Not a single mishap. That's the words of the Navi. So now that there are words of the Navi that you cannot fully appreciate until you know the events. But the general picture we were able to have before, the difference between this pasuk and the prophecies of Bavel, this prophecy in Yirmiyahu, everybody can relate to. At any time in history, once Jews had been taken off into exile. But the prophecy about the destruction of Krypton, impossible to relate to. And therefore, that was part of the prophecies that were given to the students of the Nevi'im. And in a sense, it says, who were the ones that put together the Kitvei HaKodesh? The Kitvei HaKodesh were put together by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and they put together Chizki and Vesayato, Chizki and his group, and then Anshei Knesset HaGedolah put together the Kitvei HaKodesh, because what they saw is what can now be understood becomes part of the prophecy. Thank you very much. All right, but we have to move ahead, and as I always suggested it would be such a great idea just to read over chapters 11, 12, 13, 14. They're amazing, amazing chapters. We should be someplace toward the end of 14. Huh? Oh no, I thought we were right. Okay. Let's begin with Pasuk 24, because that's really the conclusion of the prophecy of Bavel. Nishba Hashem tzakot le'mor, the God of hosts swears, saying, Im lo kashe dimiti kein hayata. Exactly as I had imagined it, so it was. By the way, what's fascinating over here is we had been talking about the destruction of Bavel, which of course at the time of Yeshayahu hasn't happened. There hasn't been any of Bavel. Now, this prophecy of the destruction of Bavel came where? What was its context over here? Do you know what we were talking about in chapters 7, 8, 9, and 10? In those chapters, we were talking about the great threat of Ashur. Ashur, Assyria, is the great power of the day. Sancherev, Tiglath-Pileser, Salmaneser, the one who sends the ones who send the 10 tribes into exile, the ones who conquer all of Eretz Israel, and it's around, they are encamped around Yerushalayim when the angel of death comes down and destroys them. And we have the quick last march of Sancherev, O Tayom, Benov, Lamod, we're going through all of the land of Binyamin. He's over there, where is it? By Givat Zarfatit, you understand? And he's looking down at Yerushalayim. And Amach met the hand, oh, you know, faith be ato, heart Zion, Givat Yerushalayim. And then to call it Givat Yerushalayim is already, you know, sort of being mizalzel, treating it with contempt. You know, the hill that's called Jerusalem. So Ganesh, Ganesh, the Gansamayim. It's not Hare Yehuda. A few, nothing with nothing. And there he is destroyed. Ah! What that brings the Navi to say, that to tell us of the destruction of Ashur, who's going to destroy Ashur? Bavel will ultimately bring down, in other words, the forces of Ashur are destroyed near Yerushalayim, but the ultimate collapse, the fall, the disappearance of the Assyrian Empire was the result of the ascendancy of the Babylonian Empire. So you know what the Navi is telling you? By the way, a footnote, precisely what Bavel did to Ashur is going to be done to that conqueror in turn. The same thing. Conquering doesn't pay. Crime, historic crime, doesn't pay. And therefore, whatever happens to Ashur, and who's going to bring them down? It's Bavel. The same thing is going to happen to Bavel, and it's going to repeat itself throughout all of history. And therefore, now, he finally brings the thread back at the end of chapter 14. The thread is going back to chapter to chapters 9 and 10 that were talking about the fall of Ashur. Nishba Hashem Tzvakot Le'mor, the God of hosts swears, saying, Im lo kashe dimiti kein hayata. Exactly the way I imagined it, that's the way it was. The Hasher Ya'atzti, and as I have given counsel, what I've said, he tokom. That's what's going to be. Lishbor Ashur Barzi. 25 in chapter 14. Lishbor Ashur Barzi. What it really means is, it may take, yet it's going to take, I'd say, another 50, 60 years till Ashur is really crushed completely. The capital city of Ashur is Nineveh. There are going to be a number of Nevi'im that are going to talk about the fall of Nineveh and the collapse of Ashur. The final blow is going to be given by Bavel. But the beginning of the end of most great conquerors begins either in Eretz Yisrael or as a result of a struggle against the Jewish people. Sorry, I may sound like a chauvinist, but I will only say it as I see it, and we have quoted often a Roman historian who said, when Judea rebelled, the entire Roman Empire quaked. Judea was the smallest province of the Holy Roman Empire, and the beginning of the end, though Babylon crushed thee, Rome led thee captive, homeless thy head. Where are those nations, mighty and fearsome? Thou hast survived them. They are all dead. Why are you looking at me like that? Because it sounds like a poem? It sure is. All right. The beginning of the end of great empires started either in Eretz Yisrael. It may have taken another 100 years, but Rome was no longer Rome after Judea rebelled a number of times. The Greek Empire, huh? Well, don't cut me out, since then. Cut me out. She starts at the end. Yeah. There's a whole history. I have a whole bunch of empires to go through. The beginning of the end of the Greek Empire. In other words, what was true of the Roman Empire was true of the Greek. If one of the smallest provinces of the Greek Empire can rebel successfully against Greece, do you know what encouragement it gives to people all over the world? The beginning of the end of Rome was really, it started in Judea. It took a while, but it only started here. And there's no question about it that the great British Empire, crumbled, started here, even before India began its rebellion against Britain. The real rebellion began here in 1944 when Begin, you understand, Begin and 100 people declared war on the globe-girdling British Empire. But 3 years later, the sun was setting all over the... I don't even know whether the sun was rising anymore on the British Empire. Yes?
Napoleon in Akko.
You know, I didn't think of Napoleon in Akko.
He came to Akko
and he had to leave. In Eretz Yisrael, he fell apart. That was the beginning, one of his great defeats was Napoleon in Akko. Hitler and Machshimei Vizifra. It was at the gates of Eretz Yisrael that the first at El Alamein. El Alamein. We talked about El Alamein a number of times. Sure, it was right over here at the beginning of the end of Hitler was here, but it wasn't quick enough. The Soviet Empire, the movement of Jewish dissidents. There's no question about it that it hastened by 100 years the end of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And if you think our going out in the United States on Solidarity Sunday once a year didn't have something to do with it, you're making a big mistake. 2, 4, 6, 8, open up the iron gates, understand? And a Sharansky and a Yosef Mendelevich and an Ida Nudel and a Yuli Kasherovsky and a Yuli Edelstein, and all of they were the only ones that were fighting the great Russian Empire. And the Russian Empire crumbled, just in time so that Jews can get out of Russia. So what the Navi is saying is, Lishbar Ashur Ba'artzi, to break Ashur in my land. Ashur is going to fall 50, 60 years later by the hands of Bavel. But already the back of Ashur was broken, Ba'arzi, Va'al Horai, and upon my mountains, Avu Senu, I will trample him. And that's where the Hebrew word etvusa. A tvusa is a, you can have a tvusa in the Bechirot. What is that? That's a, it's a simple English word. Why don't you know? A defeat. But a tvusa is not just a defeat. In other words, Barak's defeat at the hands of Sharon was a tvusa. That's right. That's right. Crushing. The word tvusa means to crush, to trample upon. Where is Ashur, the great the great empire, where is it going to be broken and where is it going to be crushed? In my land and upon my mountains. The Sarma Aleim Ulo, and therefore, and this of course, takes us straight back. I mean, here you have to see how it takes us straight. Ah, Mamash, I opened up to that page. You'll see, you have to remember a previous pasuk in a Navi to understand the present pasuk. Over here it says, I'll tell you right away. First, I want you to read this pasuk. If you'll stop mishing in between, you'll miss both of them. V'sor me'aleihem ulo. His yoke will be removed from upon them. V'subalo. And his burden, the burden of Ashur, me'al shichmo yasur, from upon his shoulder shall be removed. Take a look back in chapter 10, Pasuk 27, Chav Zayin. Chapter 10, Pasuk Chav Zayin. V'hoya b'yomahu, and when it will come to place, take place on that day, Yosur subalo me'al shichmecha, v'ulo me'al tzavorecha. All that's happened over here is they are in a different order, and I think, in a sense, what's happened over here is that what began in chapter 10 is now coming to its conclusion in chapter 14. And the beautiful way in which the Navi does it is by using the two phrases that describe the removal of the yoke of Ashur and just doing it the opposite way around. There it said, Yosur subalo me'al shichmecha, his burden will be removed from upon your shoulders, v'ulo, and his yoke, me'al tzavarecha. And over here it says, v'sar me'aleim, ulo, v'supalo, me'al shikmo yasur. That's it, that's the end. That's from the beginning to the end, and this is one of the beautiful ways in which the Navi is telling you that everything that we've talked about in all of these chapters, they're all interrelated. All interrelated. And now we are coming to the close. Zot ha'etzah ha'yirutzah al kol ha'aretz. This is God's counsel that he gives for the whole earth. V'zot ha'yad ha'netuyah al kol ha'goyim. And this is the hand that is stretched out upon all of the nations. Stretched out. And Rashi so simply explains beautifully what the Navi is saying. Al Ashur b'shato v'al Bavel b'shato. What happens to Ashur in his time will happen to Bavel in her time. And you can add Paras and Madai and Yavon and Romi and all of them straight along. In other words, this is God's counsel. Great, great empires that are evil and brutal are going to fall because this is what God has advised for history. That's what he's going to do. And it's going to happen to each one in their time. They're going to get it. Ki Hashem tzvakot yo'otz. Because the God of hosts is the one, this has been his idea, he has counseled me affair, who's going to be able to object, who's going to break what God wishes. V'yoto hanetuya, that's his outstretched hand against the evil of this world. Umi yishivano, who's going to take that hand back? So here it wraps up everything. I tell you, I say it so often, but I have to say it again. If it would be up to me to make the chapter divisions, here is where I would have ended a chapter. Because what's really happened over here is a prophecy that's going on now for five prophets, six prophets. And just to tell you in the middle, don't think that the one who's going to bring down Ashur is going to live happily ever after. He too will be brought. He too will be brought.
What about Germany?
That they're so wealthy today and they're so powerful today? Give me some time and I'll find a pasuk. And not only give me time and find a pasuk, I agree, Germany has not received the punishment that it has so earned. They haven't. That's exactly what I was going to say. It still can come. Even though, let's not forget, I mean, the destruction of Germany in 45, yesterday was VE Day. No, I'm not ashamed to say I remember VE Day, Victory in Europe Day. I was a little boy, but oh, was that a joyful, joyful day. There's no question of that. But no, I hold that there's more waiting for...
Sure. Huh? What about the Calvinists?
Well, let's give them a little time here. Watch. A few more pesukim in the Navi. Bishnat Mot Hamelech Ochoz. By the way, this is another pasuk that puts everything into the time context and was the beginning of chapter 7.
It better be 7.
Vayehi b'mei Ochoz ben Yotam ben Uziyahu melech Yehuda. First pasuk in chapter 7 talks about the days of Ochoz. And now we have already arrived at the death of Ahaz. By the way, there was one other thing that I wanted to point out that you should have remembered from last year. Who am I kidding? Bavel does receive mention one other place in Yeshayahu. And we learned it last year at the end of chapter 39. There had been visitors that came to Yeshayahu, chapter 39. Ba'etahi sholach merodach baladon ben baladon melech bavel svarim u'minchel chizkiyo, the days of chizkiyo that's still in the days of Yeshayahu, there's already a country called Bavel. It's nothing, it may be like a place, Qatar, Bahrain, Dubai. I mean, nothing but, a new kid on the block, and they send messengers to to Chizkiyo, and Chizkiyo shows them all of his wealth, and Yeshayahu comes to him and he says, "What did you show these people?" And Chizkiyo says, "And I showed them everything." So Yeshayahu says, in chapter 39, pasuk 5, Vayom Yeshayahu Chizkiyo Shimu Dvar Shma Dvar Hashem Tzvakos. Listen to the word of the God of hosts. Hinei Yomim Boim V'nisor Kol Asher V'beitecha V'asher Otsu Avotecha Ad Hayom Azeb Bavel. That's what Bavel is mentioned. Chizkiyo is already told that a day is going to come that everything that belongs to you and to your people is going to be taken off to Bavel. And by the way, I believe that this is a prophecy precisely as said, Yeshayahu said it to Chizkiyahu. This was not told to all of Klal Yisrael. He would have told it to all of Klal Yisrael, it would have been like telling them that everything in Eretz Yisrael is going to be taken off to Liechtenstein or Monaco. Bavel with Baladan ben Baladan was a backwater little country that wanted to have some kind of a relationship with one of the superpowers of the day. That's why they sent an emissary to Chizkiyo. They were meaningless. They were meaningless at the time. That's the other reference to Bavel. All right, so now we are at the death of Bishnach Mot HaMelech Ochoz Hoyo HaMaso HaZeh. This Masa, and it explained according to the Malbim, that a Masa is a prophecy that tells a story. Now the Masa of Bavel, chapters 13 and 14, were a story of the rise and fall of Bavel. Al tismichi peleshet kuleich. He now turns to Plishtim. Plishtim, of course, is the coastal plain. Ashkelon, Ashdod, Aza, Chan Yunus, Dir el Balach, the whole area down there. Al tismichi peleshet kuleich, ki nishbar shevet makech. During the days of Ochoz, Plishtim invaded Eretz Yisrael a number of times and were quite successful in their attacks against Ahaz. Right? They were shooting spears from Aza. You understand? So what else is new? But what's amazing is, I saw it this morning, it threw me. There are things that you can learn sometimes that make an impression on you, sometimes they don't. It depends on your frame of mind or what's going on in the world at the time. Ahaz was not successful in his struggle against Plishtim. The son of Ahaz is Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is going to know exactly how to deal with Plishtim. And the Plishtim have beaten a number of times during the days of Chizkiyahu. So now, where am I here? We're still in chapter 14, yeah. So Altismichi Peleshet Kulei, all of Plishtim, don't be happy, King Nishbar Shevet Makeh. The staff that beats you has been broken. Now wait a minute. What are they happy about? That Ahaz died. Ahaz, the king of Yehuda, died. How can the Navi describe Ahaz as Shevet Makeh, the stick that beats you, when the fact is that the Plishtim were the ones who were beating Ahaz? So in the Daf Mikra, I see one shot. Altismichi, don't be happy and overjoyed that the king of Yehuda, Ahaz, has died. Hashem Yishbar Shevet Makech, the stick that hits you has been broken. Kloma, Shemet HaMelech Shel HaMamlacha, the king of the kingdom, Asher Haitan Yilchemed Bach, that waged war with you, Umakotach, has died, your enemy has died. Don't be so happy. Then he says, very beautiful, V'achal Pisha Plishtim Hem Shepashtu Al Yehuda B'mei Ahaz V'kavshu Arim Yehuda. The historic facts are precisely the opposite. In Dirayam it says the Plishtim invaded Yehuda, and they conquered many cities of Yehuda. Mikol Makom, V'adai Shetanu, there's no question about it that the Plishtim claimed She'ohaz Wa'amaka Behem. They certainly claimed, you don't just go to war against somebody, you claim that the victim is the aggressor. Right? That's how you do it, right? And not only that, you convince the whole world that the victim is really the aggressor. What do you mean? They kill a five-month-old baby, so we're shooting back, you understand? They're killing our Tanzim, so we're fighting back. And you just turn the tables completely. So that, you know what? I think that the Navi is even telling us one step further. You keep saying it over so much that everybody else should believe it, you believe it yourself. So even those, the ones who clearly invaded Eretz Yehuda in the days of Ahaz, well, the Plishtim, they saw themselves as the poor victims of Ahaz, and therefore they're so happy when the guy who beat them dies. Mikomakom vadar shetanu, certainly they claim she'Ahaz hu amaka behem, Ahaz is the one who smites them, v'hem nilchamim bo, and they wage war with him, l'hagin al atzmam, to defend themselves. Hestar Maisa. What a beautiful pshat in the words over here. Because the historical record is clear. Ahaz did not succeed. Plishtim invaded and attacked. This is to me. Nothing changes. This is the Dat Mikra. Dat Mikra was put out by Mosada Rav Kook. It's in them. And this one is Yeshayahu was done by Amos Chacham. Amos Chacham was the Chatan HaTanach. I don't know. He's 15, 16 years old. Chatan HaTanach. I mean, but he's awesome. His knowledge of Tanakh is unbelievable. And sometimes, something like this I saw in none of the Mefarshim, but it's the only thing that explains the pasuk. Let's see. So you see, Rashi was troubled by the same thing, but Rashi does approaches it in a different way. Rashi says, "Listen to the words of Rashi. First of all, tismichi pleshet kuleich. Don't Plishtim be happy. Don't all of you be happy." Shahare Motor Rosh Bimei Ahaz, you lifted your heads in the days of Ahaz. Shahaya Rosha? Ahaz was a Rosha, and therefore Goram Lo Risho, his evil cause, Shenim Sabiyetchem. Jews were given over into the hands of the Plishtim. And he brings the same psukim that I brought by the Das Bikr. Ki Nishbar Shevet Makeh. Obviously, now I understand what was bothering Rashi. Because the one who beat you has been broken. But he never beat you. Achaz didn't beat you. So Rashi therefore expands the pasuk to mean the following. Ki nechlisha v'nishkala malchus beis David. Because what's happened over here with the death of the king, so the kingdom of the house of David has been weakened. Ki nechlisha weakened v'nishkala and has been lowered. Malchus beis David shahiyu lemudim l'hakos bachem. Those who always used to beat you, beginning with David. David against Goliath. Because Rashi understands that he cannot refer, Yishayahu cannot be referring to Achaz as the one who beat you, because Achaz didn't beat you. So therefore he expands it to be talking about Malchus based David that often beat Plishtim, Kemosha Matsinu with David. We found that that was true by David. V'chein Uziyo Melech Yehuda. In Divrei Hayamim, Uziyo, king of Yehuda, who was the one before Uziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Uziyo also was extremely successful in battle against Plishtim, and this is in Divrei Hayamim. V'yotza v'yilachim v'pishtim v'yidrotz et chalmat God. I'm beginning to think, you know what nobody ever learns? Never ever learns? I shouldn't say it because my sir won't let me live this down. Maybe we should learn Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim is probably one of those difficult. I'm just thinking for next year. My wife has already been after me to think about next year. Maybe Divrei Hayamim, not Divrei Yamim Aleph, Divrei Yamim Bet. All right, we're going to think about that. Let's go. Now you're going to like the rest of the puzzle. Why shouldn't Plishtim be happy? Achaz, you know, they hate Achaz. Achaz is dead. Kimi Shoresh Nachash. From the root of the snake, Yetze Tsefa. A Tsefa is going to come. A Tsefa is an even more poisonous snake than Stam, a snake. In other words, you think that because Achaz is dead, you have reason to be full of joy. From that Nachash, that Achaz is going to come out of Tsefa. That Tsefa is Chizkiyo. And the Plishtim are going to be beaten time and time again by Chizkiyo. Ufirio, and the fruit of that snake, Sarof Ba'ofeif. In other words, it shoots its poison, that it's like Sarof, like poison Ba'ofeif, like it's flying, you know? Like a mortar? Huh? It goes flying. So don't be so happy. Your happiness is premature, that's the word I was looking for. V'ro b'chore dalim v'yavyonim lavetach yirbatsu v'heimati barov sharsheich u'sheidi teich yaharog. V'ro b'chore dalim, the dalim, the poor ones, at this particular moment in history with regard to Plishtim, Aklal Yisrael, my chosen ones, my b'chor, who are now dalim, they're going to graze, the Evyonim, and the poverty-stricken, the ones who seem to be so weak, the ones the whole world thinks that they can attack and destroy, Lovetach Yirbatsu, they're going to be lie down in security. They're going to have Beitachon. Ve'imati Barov Shoshev, but as far as you are concerned, the word that we're going to come up against number of times in the coming chapters, wail, wail, the gates, Zaki, cry out in pain, the city. Which gates and which cities? The gates and the cities of the Plishtim, because destruction is going to come upon you. Nomog Pleshet Kulech, all of Pleshet has melted. Where did we have the word Nomog? Oz Yoshir? Nomogu kol Yoshvei Knan, all who live in Knan are going to melt before God. Kimi Tzafon, because from the north, Oshon Ba, smoke is coming from the north. Ve'en Bodeid B'moadav, there is no one alone in his appointed ones, and I'll explain exactly what this means. First of all, Kimi Tzafon, from the north, Oshon Ba, the smoke is coming. So Rashi says the following. Pur oniyot kosher ka'oshen. Punishment that is as difficult as smoke, tavo aleim, is going to come upon Plishtim from the north. Asa uvuleha shehika chizkiyahu. Asa and everything around Asa was smitten by chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is the tzefa that's going to come from the nachash. And where was he? Bidro, shehika chizkiyahu. Asa was bidroma shel Eretz Yisrael to the south. B'miktsoa dromit maravit. In the southwest corner of Eretz Yisrael. It's still there. Miktsoa dromit maravit. Which therefore means you can talk of Yehuda coming from where? From the north. Nimtzeis Eretz Yisrael. Lo mitzafon. So Rashi says Eretz Yisrael is to the north. V'chein matzinu b'sifri b'hazinu. It says that when Jews fled before their enemies to the south, the Plishtim would send them back to face the enemy. So when it says Tzafon over here, it means Tzafon. Eretz Yehuda is Tzafon to Plishtim. Ve'en bo modeid b'moadav. Moadav are those who are appointed to come against Plishtim. Nobody comes alone. The entire army comes. They're no stragglers. They all come as one unit. They all come against Plishtim, and nobody is alone. It's going to be one major force that will come against them. Umayaneh, Malachei Goy. Oh, this is so beautiful. What will Yanel here really means to say or exclaim or respond? Malachei Goy, the messengers of a nation. And Rashi says, Umayagidu bimei Chizkiyo, Malachei Yisrael, ha'olchim levaseh b'sarot. The messengers of Chizkiyo who are going to bring news from Eretz Yisrael. You know what they're going to say? Do you know what they're going to say after the destruction of Plishtim? Hashem ki Hashem yisad Zion. God has founded Zion. Ubo yechesu aniyam. This is so good. I get choked up over here. God is the one who has founded Zion. Ubo yechesu in Zion will find shelter aniyam amo, the poor of his people. Any Jew that will give me your what?
You're tired, you're poor.
Not Ellis Island. They should have the Statue of Liberty with Emma Lazarus' poem, give me your Iske Mitchet, your Iske Vaked, etc., etc. Maybe my wife shouldn't always give me every email that's sent to me. But she gave me one last week. Somebody sent me an email. A response that a Rosh Hashiva in the United States had given in at a Torah Masorah convention when it was an Ask the Rosh Hashiva session, and somebody asked this Rosh Hashiva, how are we to relate to the State of Israel? This may have been said 10 or 15 years ago. It really makes no difference. This is timeless. So he said that the State of Israel, the only two godless states in the whole world, Communist Russia and the State of Israel, they removed the name of God. As a compromise, they put in Tzur Yisrael. Understand? And therefore, he says the greatest Chil Hashem since creation. I may have mentioned it's driving me crazy. The greatest Chil Hashem since creation. Is that a dramatic statement? Like, that's the kind of statement you'd expect me to make. Like in Wars Tanakh, you know, right? Okay. But there's somebody that makes even more broader statements. The greatest Chil Hashem since creation of the world is the establishment of the State of Israel. No. A Rosh Hashiva, yeah, absolutely. I have it. It's floating around on the internet, you know. It's part of. Maybe my wife should not have given it to me. But there it is. It was there on the email, and somebody sent it to somebody in Beit Shemesh, and this fellow in Beit Shemesh was so disturbed, so upset, so he goes to his rabbi, who's me. And so I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? And why was it sent out on the email? Because somebody decided that there's so much pro-Israel, pro-Yom HaTzmut stuff, somebody has to say the truth, and therefore they sent this out. My response is going to be, but I'll tone it down a little bit, that making that statement is kfira. It's a rejection of God. I don't believe that Ben-Gurion created the state. You know who created the state? Ki Hashem Yisad Tzion. If Tzion is established, there's only one force in the world that does it. Ki Hashem Yisad Tzion. My response over here, of course, to this Rosh Yeshiva is, listen, how do I view Shabbos? Do I view Shabbos through the spectacles of a Michal Shabbos? Because it's Michal Shabbos, I don't want to have anything to do with Shabbos. If somebody takes a pair of tefillin and he pokes out somebody's eyes, so therefore the tefillin are not holy, the Rebbeinu gives a great gift to Klal Yisrael. So there are never people who don't see God there. So I shouldn't see God there? It's madness. It's madness. We can't have anything to do with it. I mean, because they don't see God in the events of our time, that means he's not there? Of course not, that's madness. Adarabba. Our responsibility is to say, Sehayom also Hashem Nogilo Menizmechavau, Ki Hashem Yisad Tzion, Upo Yechesu Ani Yami. The Rebbe Yishon knew that his people needed a place. So therefore he established Tzion. Who established Tzion? The only real Chilul Hashem of the establishment of the State of Israel is that the instrument of the divine chesed was Ben-Gurion. And you know why? Because we, from the Yidolach, weren't there. That's the Chilul Hashem. That's the burden that we have to carry as from the Yidin. We didn't come. And they came, and they died, and they sacrificed, and they built. And that is an eternal Chilul Hashem upon us. I feel so much better. I feel so much better. Now I'm going to rewrite it. I wrote it moments ago. Now I'm going to rewrite it and get it out on the internet. I, of course, plan on using a pen name because I'm a coward. All right. Now, there are other reasons. Huh?
I don't feel bad with it, but I think it's a terrible thing.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, but I feel bad. I wasn't talking about how you feel. I care about how you feel, but I... Masom Moav, chapter 15. Now, this is the, we will see, we're talking about a series of chapters beginning with 13. 13 was, 13 and most of 14 were the prophecy of Bavel. Now we just had in a few psukim the prophecy of Plishtim, and now we're going to have Moav. Moav. Masom Moav. Oh, can I trust you to, take this with you for this week and next week?
Take one. Now this has to go to Kim.
We are. That's true. I agree with 100%. We're making up. We're absolutely making up. This is a map. Queenie, back to...
I have one here. Sorry.
Yeah, the whole bunch. Masamoa. The prophecy about Moab. Ki Belail. Shudat. You know what? Maybe I'm going to read a Rashi to you. I'm going to read a Rashi to you before I read this. There's going to be a whole... It's a Rashi much, much later on in the chapter, but we're going to talk about the destruction of Moab. And you're most probably thinking to yourself, you know... No, we can relate to the destruction of Plishtim. We can relate to the destruction of Bavel. Bavel destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash. But what do we want from poor Moab? So just sit back and read a Rashi on Pasuk 7. For what Moab did, there will come punishment. Shahayu kfuye tova. They were ungrateful. Shahadei v'kamo mekamot in many places. Omad Avram lelot. Avram stood beside Lot, but say Tomi Choron, when he left Choron, who did he take with him? He took with him Lot. Ubelecht Olam Mitzrayim, when he went to Egypt, he took Lot along with him. Lot benefits a great deal. He too comes out of Mitzrayim, a wealthy man. Ubezuchuto Sholeach Mitocha Afecha V'Nilcham Alav. and it's in the schut of in the schut of Avram that when Sodom is destroyed, who is saved from Sodom? It's not Lot because of his own schut, it's because of the schut of Avram. And when Lot is captured, who goes out to wage war against four mighty kingdoms? Avram! Avram does all of this. He's the one who wages war with Amraphel and his friends. V'hoyolahem ligmol tovo l'zaro. Moab should have treated their cousins much, much better than they did in history. V'hem hoyu monim otam. You know how Moab treated them? Moab taunted the Jewish people. And you'll see on the map that Moab were right next to Reuven and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. And when Ashur came to take them into exile, Hayusroel bochim umitoninim. Listen to, oh, this is so bad. Yisrael cried and complained to their neighbors, Moab. V'hayu'onim lahem, and Moab said to them, Amatem mitoninim, what are you complaining about? V'halole beit avichem atem holchem. They're taking you off to your father's house. Where did Avram come from? Mesopotamia, Ram Naran, you understand? The people are being taken off into exile, and you tell them, what are you crying about? They're taking you from Tel Aviv to Galicia, so you're going back to your father's house. You understand what a terrible taunt that is? Not enough that they didn't come to the aid and the assistance of Klal Yisrael. Moab became a virulent enemy of the Jewish people. Avram Avichem lo me'eve ha-nohar ba? Didn't your father Avram come from the other side of the river? So they're taking you across Mesopotamia. That's the way you talk to a people who are suffering. That's what Spanya says. Shamati cherpas Moav ugedufei b'nei Amon. I have heard the shame of Moab, how Moab shamed the Jewish people and the curses of the people of Ammon. And furthermore, it says that Moab, in the 3 years that Sancheriv, king of Ashur, laid siege to Shomron, the ones who assisted him were Moab. So now you know a little bit of the history, just a little bit of the history of Moab, and we expected a great deal more from Moab, and not only didn't we get anything good, but we suffered greatly at the hands of Moab. So therefore, now you'll feel better when you read about what's going to happen to Moab. Masa Moab ki b'leil at night shudad or Moab or every time you come to the name of the city, there's going to be a list of cities. Boy, Or better be someplace on this map. If Or is not going to be on this map, we'll have to put it on the map. Huh? Oh, one of them I see. Yeah. Ki Baleil Shudat Or Moav Nidma. Silence. The city of Or. That's the name of the city. Ki Baleil at night. Shudat Kir Moav. Kir of Moav. Now Kir of Moav you have down at the bottom of the right hand side. Kir Moav. Or has to be someplace around there. All right. But anyway, you see that Moab is on the east side of the Jordan, coming all the way down to near Aqaba. No. Ola Habayit? Not to Aqaba?
No, it's at the end of the Dead Sea.
The end of the Dead Sea. You're right. I thought I was looking at the Red Sea. Edom is by Aqaba. Tov miyod. Gilad is in the north, then Moab, and Edom is the southernmost. And that's why Edom is also called Teiman, because Teiman is south, due south, on the east side of the Jordan. Ola habayit, v'divon, habamot levechi. Moab, the people of Moab went into their houses. And Divon, the people of Divon, you see Divon above Nahal Arnon, the river Arnon, they went up onto their high places, Lebechi, to cry. In other words, Rashi says there are those who cry in the house, and there are those who cry upon their altars, the Bamot. Al Nevo, the Al Medva, Moav Yelil, about Nevo and Medvar. Medvar you see over there, and Nevo you see, we're moving northward. So now, as I told you, the word Yiyelil, to howl with, and it means the howl of pain, or the howl of hesped. Bechol roshav karcha kol zakon geduah. Every head is bald. In other words, they tore their hair out of their head. We're talking about people who are suffering a terrible crisis of destruction. Kol zakon, every beard is chopped off. Where did you have the word geduah or something like that before? Huh? Geduah. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Yes, the Minchat Shai says. Every one of you has. You have Gedua. With a Dalit. How many have with a Dalit? Mashi, you have with a.
No,
wait a minute. There's no footnote. The Minchat Shai is the Meforish that gives you the grammatic and Masoretic background. So he says, Geruah. But now, Ubekama Sifrei Hadafus. Oh, what you brought me. And in many of the printed editions, Katuv Kam Geduah B'Dalet, the Pasuk. Ube Perush Radak, it's so in the Radak. Vechein Ube Perush Radak Savyad, in the the manuscript of the Radak, it's with a Dalet. Arbe Kamas Forum Savyad Meduyokim, in many very carefully, something or other, manuscripts. V'gambit v'sloshem katuv geruwa bereish. The king kosev hachocham abarben el. You know, I wouldn't have noticed this. It's not the abarben el says geruwa. Sheze hoyolahem giroon gadol. Oh, that's what I. See here, I was trying to start up with you, of course, and I'll tell you why. Take a look in chapter 10. Right, to cut off the beard. Chapter 10, pasuk 33. The end of chapter 10, pasuk 33, where there are two psukim that describe the destruction of Ashur. Hine ha'adon Hashem Tzvakot, the master, the God of hosts. You got it? 10, 33. Misa'ef pura b'maratzah is going to cut off the branches with a saw. The Rame Hakoma and the tall ones Giduim. Cut, chop down. I would not. I could have gone through a whole lifetime of Leiv Esrim Shana and not have noticed this Minchas Shai, except for the fact that I. But I said it here.
Does it mean anything if there's a little Mr. Josh up in the race?
Well, I couldn't tell you because I don't have a ratio. No, it was probably. Let me see what it says there. Maybe he's pointing out that you should look someplace. Of course, that circle means look down here, and over here it says Nun Aleph Nusach Acher, another text Geduah. That's what. Whenever you have that circle, that's exactly what it means. And by the way, both of them have meaning. In other words, geduah means the beard is cut, chopped is more cut, you know, it could be cut to style. We're talking like chopped. And geruah means geira'on. Everybody knows what a geira'on is. What we have in the bank, you know, a minus. That's right. Exactly. A minus.
A big minus.
But maybe there's something else over here. This.
A deficit. Yes.
This brings back to mind something that I said it years ago. I don't think I said it in many years. There's one place in the Torah where there's a big Dalet. Where is there a big Dalet? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. There's one place in the Torah where there's a big resh. Come on in! There's a big resh. Where is there a big resh in Torah? No. Lo tishtachaveh le'el acher. You shall not bow down to another. Very good. You shall not bow down to another god. So the Heilige B'nai Yisrael said the following. The B'nai Yisrael said, the curse that God cursed Adam and the earth was that coats v'dardar tatzmiach l'chom en Adama, thorns and thistles, dardar, shall grow from the earth. So the B'nai Yisrael said, what does a dalad represent? The oneness of God. What does the resh represent? The resh represents El Acher, another god. Because first man denied his God, the one commandment he was given, the curse upon mankind will always be that they will be going from Dalet to Reish, Dalet to Reish. Now you see him, now you don't. Now you believe in him, now you don't. The confusion of Dalet and Reish. So I had expanded this into all sorts of other things. Ki yad al keis ka milchomo Hashem ba'amolek midor dor. The war against Amalek, midor dor, over there, dor dor is spelled without a vav. It's spelled dor dor dar dar, because Amalek is the one that wants and wishes to diminish the presence of God and his perception in the world. So therefore, then I said, of course, that's the month of Adar. Megillah doesn't have the name of God, because there's, you can read the Megillah and you can see a Dalet and you can see a Resh. But there's an Aleph before Adar to tell you that the Hashem Echad is there. The idea of the confusion that comes between a Dalet and a Resh, because the only difference between a Dalet and a Resh is that little chupchke over there on the right-hand side. So here we've come to another classic place in Tanakh that I wouldn't have known of, except for my dear students. Here it is, the Pasuk, does it say G'duah or does it say G'duah? Ruah. And we have both texts. What's fascinating is why some texts have Gedua in the text and Gedua is a footnote, and why in others Gedua is in the text and Gedua is the footnote. So I now have my homework, but don't remember, whatever it is, Moab's beard doesn't look good. That's simple. Okay? Hold on to these maps. You're going to need them for next week.